It is 1 o'clock, and it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal here for January the 20th, 2012. It's our auto show theme week, automobile theme week, and don't we love automobiles here in Detroit, here at WHFR Dearborn. And we're live in the studio, Dennis Ramars and myself here. Dennis is our news director, and I'm the host of the show along with Dennis. And we have a special guest on the phone line, a special interview for today as part of the auto theme week, as we say. So, Wes Reynal, editor of Auto Week. You there, sir?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Oh, we're great. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
You have survived the Detroit Auto Show. I assume you've been down there a few times and have thousands of your reporters, or at least a couple dozen, attending and sending back. It must be a real busy time for Auto Week.
Last week was the busy week.
Yeah.
This week, once it opens to the public, we can kind of sit back a little bit. But when it was media day last week, you know, the media,
right,
couple media days, it was mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah, they opened just to the press, but it's attended by press all over the world. I was down there a
yep.
couple of years, got press credentials, and not as much free food or drink as I thought there would be, but it was a lot of fun, a lot of showbiz with the companies putting on sort of theatrical presentations, and And it's hard for reporters to get all the facts unless you get the press packages, I think. But it is a lot of great fun. But you've seen the auto show for the public, perhaps. Yes? Sometime you slid down there this week?
Yeah, a little bit. In fact, I'm going tonight, and I took my kids over the weekend.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I love the displays this year. I had a little trouble finding my way out. It seems that their plan is to sort of block off a lot of the big car areas like Ford Motor and I mean, they're not separate rooms as such, but there's like barriers between them, and all the exits, the entrances when you come in, seem to be somewhat covered by other walls. So it's sort of like you're just wandering around rat in a maze sort. But it was a lot of fun. It was very exciting, and I went down Tuesday and really enjoyed it too. And I try to go every year, but as I said before, it's ironic, but the parking down around there at Joe Louis and elsewhere, and I know it's a popular event, but it's just terrible. I mean, even trying to walk from the lots to the center, it's kind of ironic in a car town where you don't have adequate supply of parking spaces, long waits to get your cars in and so on. But I wanted to start, first of all, why don't you tell our listeners about your background? You are the editor of Auto Week magazine, which is the only car magazine of its type, anyway, that is actually based in the city of Detroit. So your headquarters are just down Jefferson or Fort Street or somewhere?
We're on Gratiot, right behind Eastern Market.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And we're the only every other week enthusiast publication in the United States, and we have about 385,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. I'm the editor. I've been at Auto Week since '89, and you know, sort of worked my way up.
Yeah,
and
that's quite a story of American perseverance. It's not a lot of people these days can stay in the same company and work their way up. I mean, so you know all aspects of the company because you've been there. So
I've been here a long time. It's a great place to work.
But and as you mentioned too, when I subscribe to Auto Week, by the way, like it very much. Along with I also subscribe to Car and Driver, Automobile, Road and Track, and even the big one in England, Car Magazine, which is just a fantastic publication, even though it's quite pricey, about $8 or so, even if you're a subscriber a month. But yours is every 2 weeks. But the business has changed a lot. Auto Week, like many of the other companies, though, is a lot more than just a print magazine every 2 weeks.
Oh, absolutely. We have three websites. We have a racing site. You know, we have a consumer site for enthusiasts. We have a racing site. We have a collector car site for people that love the older stuff.
Hmm.
And we just launched this year a shopping site called ShopAutoWeek.com, which is strictly for people that, you know, want to pick out a car for themselves. It's more consumer slanted and less enthusiast. Less for the enthusiast, more for the general consumer.
Right. I haven't been to that site before, but I know that one of your competitors, Car and Driver, they had for the app for your iPhone, which you have an Auto Week app for now,
yep,
too, for the iPhone, as well as an iPad edition and all this stuff. But I found it extremely helpful. The Car and Driver had the basic information that Edmunds.com, which is more just a price listing website, they do some reviews, but it's not like a car magazine could do reviews. But Car and Driver's Buyer's Guide app, it's gotten old. I don't know why, but they haven't really updated it much with details about the new cars. So for somebody that's into the specifications and the tech details, they've sort of given up on that temporarily, but there's got to be a lot of distractions. I mean, this is just exploding, especially for automobile magazines. I know a lot of magazines are going to digital editions, but as you said, you've got the three websites, including ShopAutoWeek.com, and what I was amazed by, and tried to get an interview with you folks last year during our auto show week, but I guess you're too busy, because I had discovered your daily email news that you provide,
right,
as well as video news, Auto Week TV, if you want to call that, little 3 to 5 minute, very simple, but hosted and video component stories there about late-breaking things in the auto industry. And I really enjoy that. I still watch most of the episodes.
Well, we have our own studio here on our property, mm-hmm. so we film those every day in our studio. We've also launched on the Velocity Channel, which is a branch out of Discovery Channel, our own television show called Auto Week's Vincetta Garage.
Mm-hmm.
So that started, I think, three weeks ago. It's on every Tuesday night, and that's something, another new project that we're working on. So we've got, you know, four sites, the magazine, iPad app, iPhone app, television show. We got plenty going on around here.
Yeah, it must be. I know the competition, the other car magazines are doing similar things at times. I know I think Motor Trend either had or is now revising and expanding a new cable TV show, apparently.
Okay.
I guess you're just sort of trying to, besides doing a great job in all the media, but you're trying to see where the interest is among these digital audiences and the new technology.
Well, I think what we're trying to do is, you know, provide the best information to our readers in various forms. I think it really boils down to being that simple.
Mm-hmm.
We are content providers, and we provide that content in as many possible ways as we know that exist today. And I think that the websites and the iPad app, it's just all very exciting to work on. There's never a dull moment. There's no sitting around. It's just, the magazine is thriving. Everything's thriving, and it's just an exciting time to be in publishing. I don't really subscribe to the doom and gloom, print is dead theory. I think just find your opportunities and go after them.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry to say I haven't seen Vincetta's Garage yet. I'd like to, but I'm one of those people that are always looking for a deal. I just have my basic cable here in Dearborn, and the Velocity Channel is some sort of extra charge. I'm not sure how much or whether it's part of a big package that I don't have. But I have a lot of other channels, but not that didn't come up yet. So I hope that's not too expensive. I may explore that in the future. By the way, is the Speed Channel still on?
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I know they have automobile related things, but I'm looking. I'd like to see Vincetta's Garage. How would you? And we're going to stay just with Auto Week magazine just for a minute, and then we'll ask your opinion more about the cars in general and a couple of trends that the auto show especially is showing. And if you've got another 10 minutes or so, I'd love to stay online with you.
Sure.
Okay. How do you sort of perceive Auto Week as being different than all the other automobile magazines? Now, of course, the print version is once every 2 weeks, and it is true. You've got the daily email news and the daily video news, talking about weekdays, which none of the other magazines have that kind of frequency. That's different. But in terms of how you do reviews or how do you select cars, what would you say? If somebody didn't know anything about cars but wanted to start subscribing, how would you recommend Auto Week other than what I just said were some of the basics?
Well, I think Auto Week is for a little bit more of a hardcore consumer. Auto Week in the form of print is a little bit more for the hardcore enthusiast. And I will also say that most Auto Week readers are sort of the experts in, in their community, so to speak, mm-hmm. the car experts. And they dole out a lot of advice. People come up to my readers at cocktail parties and, backyard barbecues and ask them for car advice, frankly. And that's, mm-hmm. we try to give access to the entire car world every 2 weeks that nobody else offers. Mm-hmm. If I had to sum it up, that's how I would sum it up.
Well, that's all very good. I have to, I'm always, I'm always talking to people who are telling me that cars are a burden. Obviously, here at Henry Ford Community College, most of our students they have to be commuters. Few of them take buses, but cars are a big issue for them, and most of them hate them because they've got, obviously, expenses. That's the big thing, the cost of having a car and insuring it. So I'm trying. I always try to suggest if they're looking for a new car, even a new used car, how to tailor their interests better. I'm hoping that ShopAutoWeek.com has some tips for newbies.
That's exactly what Shop Auto Week is all about.
Yeah, that would be helpful to their special situation. I mean, I know what kind of car I like and drive, and I'm looking for already. And I know where to go for the test drive information. I think that's so important, the test reviews that the car magazines and Auto Week does, too, is because this is not just driving the car around the block. I mean, you have several ways of doing it. I mean, in some cases, you can take the cars actually to racetracks and test them out. But other times, it's extended tests. You keep certain cars for longer than just a day or two drive, and that's great. Your reporters are invited, I assume, to some of the press previews and debuts throughout the U.S. and sometimes in Europe even, right? So
yep.
There's all of
We drive them here for a couple of weeks, and we do drive them on the previews, you know, here and abroad. Mm-hmm. We do have a long-term fleet of cars that we keep for a year. In fact, at the moment, I'm driving our long-term Grand Cherokee, mm-hmm. for example. So that's basically the way it's covered. There's several ways that we get behind the wheel of we try to drive every new car and truck available in America.
Wow, yeah, that's a big job. So I mean, that's one reason people should read, is because especially if they say something like I don't like to drive. It's very boring. Many cars, just because I say they're more responsive. Maybe a little better performance, but actually better handling. I think they're very exciting, even if you're only just driving them around town. You know, you don't have to do crazy driving in order to appreciate a car that's really well engineered. And we're not just talking about the expensive ones, right? So,
well, that's the thing. The cars, they're getting so good now. It's really, I can't really think of a flat out bad car available right now.
Mm-hmm.
As a new car. It's getting so competitive, and they're getting so good. There's really something for everyone.
I didn't even think that in the 60s, I'm a very old person, I didn't even think a friend of mine had a Corvair Monza, and I thought it was fantastic. And we were doing pretty crazy things with it, even though it had the engine in the rear behind the rear wheels, even, which is not a good balance thing, but I didn't think it was unsafe at any speed. These days, though, it's still interesting. There's still reviews, even in Auto Week and elsewhere, that, hey, this car's brakes are not as good. I'm thinking the Jeep Wrangler, typically, whether it's your magazine or others, they always say it's got sort of weak brakes, and maybe don't need brakes that much off-road.
The thing about the Wrangler is it's got good brakes for off-roading.
Yes, it's probably true, right? It's a special, different design that's set up for that, just like their suspension in that over the road. Although they've made real improvements the last couple of years, I understand, but over the road, it's not as good as many other cars. But off road, of course, it's more ideal. Let's get into I wanted to say the other thing, too, to our listeners, and you probably will agree. Another reason to read the car magazines regularly is what's coming up. If you're thinking of buying a car, a new car, if you can afford a new car, whether it's inexpensive or more expensive, there's always new cars now that are being released every couple of months, whether it's all of a sudden there's a 2013 out, you know, or if you know about what's coming out in the near future, you can maybe get something that's really, really special or really much better than what you're currently considering. I mean, I really appreciate that, those kinds of insights too, about the next thing around. I won't, my lease on my current car doesn't run out until 2013, around October, but I'm still looking at making a list, you know, about what might be also under consideration for me at that time. I love those advanced looks at what's going to be coming out.
I remember when I was a kid, they all came out in the fall.
Yeah, right.
And now it's all year round. It's literally every couple of weeks there's something new.
And I'm just guessing, too, aren't there awful lot more makes and models now? I mean, the European cars are...
Oh, yeah, the competition's just intense.
Yeah, and Chinese cars are coming into this country. And I mean, just a huge number of cars to choose from at all the different price levels. Well, let's get back to the auto show. What did you think were especially displayed excitingly this year? How would you summarize the the top one or two stories from the Detroit Auto Show?
Well, there's you know, a half a dozen must-sees, in my opinion, and the Ford Fusion is a highlight. We named that our best in show. We do awards at these mm-hmm. international shows.
Mm-hmm.
So we named the Ford Fusion the best in show, and the Acura NSX was our best concept. Dodge has relaunched a car called the Dart,
mm-hmm.
which, if you remember the Dodge Dart from the 70s.
I'm sorry, I do, yes.
That name back.
Uh-huh.
And that was our most significant. And the most fun car in the show, in our opinion, was the new 911 convertible.
Well, I love the Porsches, and God bless them for actually putting their cars in the show and actually having many of them open to sit in.
Yep.
The more luxury cars, I always used to like to go to, I used to go down and like very much to see Ferraris and Lamborghinis, and that's in something now called the Gallery, which is
right.
sort of a closed experience. Only 500 people paying $500 a person can get into that thing. Of course, the Ferrari people said, well, you know, most of the people come to the auto show, they can't afford a Ferrari, so why should we display it? You know, well, maybe they'll win a lottery or something. You know, I think it's just wrong to limit the that display. Although we do have a Ferrari dealership out in Farmington Hills somewhere, so if you really wanted to see one, folks, as an average person, I guess you could just go in the showroom. They'll probably let you in the door. Maybe you have to call ahead. I don't know. They check your credit rating or something.
The Gallery's a little bit of a controversial move right now. I think, mm-hmm. I don't know, they may rethink it.
Yeah, because even Jaguar, I mean, Jaguars are down at 50,000, or maybe you can get into one at 55 or 60 anyway, but, Jaguars, the Range Rover Evoque, was that was in the Gallery too, wasn't it? It wasn't on the floor.
No, Jaguar and Land Rover did not come to Detroit this year, and the
right.
reason is that they, you know, they're owned by the Indian company Tata now.
Yeah, Tata.
And right leading up to the Detroit show was the show in New Delhi.
Oh,
and so they concentrated their efforts there, and I guess they get something like 18 million people through that show in a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Jag and Land Rover were told by the home office, you're going to have a display at the Delhi show. So they were not in Detroit.
No money left.
We think it was a mistake. They think it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So I would look for Jag and Land Rover to be back next year.
Yeah, because they were the lesser expensive of the ones. And, of course, Porsche, I mean, the 911 you mentioned, that they're all like 80, 90,000 and up. So they're not an expensive car. Of course, they have a Boxster and a Cayman model that may be in the 50s, 50,000 to 60,000, I guess, if you wanted to get an entry-level thing. So, but I wanted to mention, too, in Ford country here, Ford had, we're not doing ads for anybody on this show. We can't as a non-commercial station, but the Ford Fusion you mentioned is the new Ford Fusion, the 2013. I'm not sure.
Right.
Is that in the dealerships now, or will it be shortly in the spring?
It'll be in dealerships in the summer.
Oh, summer this year. Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. And it's just a beautiful car. I encourage your listeners to, if you go to the show, you got to go look at that new Fusion. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to have a decent performance version. They never really have had one, but they do have coming up, maybe it's a year away or something, even a plug-in hybrid for it. I know they had a hybrid
that'll
before.
That'll be out in the fall.
Yeah, and that's great. And the Ford Focus ST excites me. Now, that's the Focus model is on sale now, but the ST is a significant performance upgrade, something like the VW GTI performance, I would guess. Whatever, it looks beautiful, and I know they're working really hard to do the Ford is putting a lot of time into getting the tuning right, so it handles really well for enthusiasts. So, and that shouldn't necessarily be more than $30,000, I hope.
No, I think it'll be under 30.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the hybrid versus plug-in hybrid versus electric versus diesel competition? Must be confusing for the average person who's not reading your magazine to sort out all these different kinds of power choices and powertrain choices.
Well, I think right now gasoline is still at a psychological barrier beneath where people start worrying about that
mm-hmm.
too much. But you're right. There's a lot of different forms of powertrain, and I think this country is going to embrace diesel sooner rather than later, especially if gas. $4 a gallon seems to be sort of that barrier that I was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Once gas gets up around 4 or over 4, you know, people flock to the smaller cars and the hybrids and the diesels.
There must seem to be. I have a BMW diesel myself. I was lucky enough to. There was some tax incentive last year, and the dealer was not kicking them out the door fast enough, so I got a fantastic deal that was actually lower than some gas-powered similar cars at the time. But the price of diesel fuel is either the same as premium gas right now in this country or higher, and I'm not too happy about that, but I am getting much improved gas economy. I think the Volkswagen diesel on the highway gets about 40 miles per gallon or 42.
Oh, yeah,
so.
At least.
It might compensate for that extra cost right now. It's interesting to me that I was looking at the price of diesel around the world. It's much less, even for the clean diesel. Apparently, our tax system is responsible because there's a lot higher taxes on the sale of diesel fuel than on gasoline. And so it's not a good encouragement for people to choose higher efficiency diesel cars. But I'm all in favor of diesel. I love the car, and there's no soot or noise like the olden days. It's just a wonderful car, and no spark plugs.
It's interesting when you go to Europe and mm-hmm. see that more than half of the consumers are driving diesels, and you come here and it's something like 5% or something. And I think that'll change again as gas prices rise. You're going to see more hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and diesels on the road.
They say that the higher price for diesel here, besides the higher taxes in the U.S., I've heard them say, well, we don't have enough refineries making diesel gas. Well, somebody build a diesel refinery. The government gives some incentive for that because it would help everybody in the long run, especially with because diesel, as far as I understand, diesel refining, it's not as difficult or as expensive to make diesel fuel as it is to make gasoline. Or at least premium gas, anyway. I'm glad you mentioned diesel because I'm a big advocate. If choices are there, and the electric cars for myself, even the Ford Focus Electric and the Leaf, they only have about 100-mile range supposedly, and I'd like to be able to safely get to Ann Arbor and back from Dearborn, which is
have to plug it in when you get to
it.
Work.
Yeah, I have to find. Well, I don't live in Ann Arbor. I'm just saying I live in Dearborn, thank goodness. But and so the electric car would be great. But I like to drive to Ann Arbor like once a week or so. And so that's my limit anyway. Somebody said, the Tesla electric Roadster, they were saying has a range of about 150 or 180 miles, I think. So that would have been great if it didn't cost so much. What did you think of just a couple more questions here that I saw about... some of the concept cars down at the auto show. I had two Chevrolets in my past history, a 73 Corvette, which was beautiful, but sort of a pile of junk. It was their low quality Chevette. I know you've been associated with Chevrolet marketing and introduction of the Corvette in 2005, but let me tell you, at 73, it looked lovely, but I had to get rid of them in 3 months. I mean, turn signal lights were burning out, and I was just terrible. And then I had another terrible Chevy. It was a Chevy Vega, but I won't go into that. That's a horror story. How I ever bought that, beyond that, Chevy actually showed their true 140S.
They showed a couple of little concept cars. Chevrolet did. And Buick had a concept car there. There's a really sharp Lexus concept. Mm-hmm. There's some really, really sharp concept cars down at I mentioned the Acura mm-hmm. NSX.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That was really good looking. So there's probably 20 really interesting concepts there, 15 to 20 interesting concepts at the show. But the highlight of the show for us was that Fusion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if they have suspension and handling improvements and engine improvements to go along with that look, it's certainly going to be a top seller for them. I'm sure of that. About the true 140S though, that's supposedly a concept car for a car that would be maybe less than $30,000 too. So
they're talking on if they were to build those two concepts that Chevrolet showed, they're talking both of them would be closer to 20.
Oh, boy. Yeah, because that's really exciting. And people like exciting-looking cars as well as good-performing cars. And their current Sonic is not all that impressive to me in terms of looks, but what the heck. I'd like to see a comparison test sometime in the future between the so-called Cadillac ATS that they showed and the BMW 3 Series. I know that's supposedly...
Well, that ATS is aimed squarely at the 3 Series.
Right.
We'll see if it, you know, once we drive it, we'll see how it stacks up. But mm-hmm. it is definitely aimed at the sort of 3 Series A4, you know, Audi A4 class of car. Mm-hmm. And it's a smaller car for Cadillac. It'll be interesting to see if Cadillac consumers remember or don't remember the Cimarron, which was a bit of a disaster for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that the ATS is interesting from that standpoint because it's the first time in a long time that Cadillac is taking a shot at a BMW. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. We haven't driven it yet. We'll probably drive it in the next 6 months, I would guess.
I've had four BMWs in the past, all the bottom of their line because it was all I could afford. You know, no options, order from the factory, nothing on it. I've had a little Z3, and I've had a 3 Series, and I love the handling in that, and I don't know why more cars can't have that ability. And I'm hoping for Cadillac, a U.S. manufacturer, that they can pull that off. Well, we've been talking to Wes Rainall for about the last half hour. I really appreciate your time today. I know you're very busy, but trying to recover from the auto show at least. There's still two more days in the auto show, folks. Sunday they close at 5, but hope you can get down there and see that. And Wes, I wish you good luck with all the different projects at Auto Week magazine, autoweek.com, shopautoweek.com, Vincetta's Garage, and all the... if you go to autoweek.com, folks, you know, it's free. You can get those daily emails, either the news version or the video version or both, and I think that's a great value and source of information. Doesn't cost anything either, so...
Well, thanks very much, and call anytime you need... any questions answered.
That's great. I appreciate all of your time today, and continue doing the good work. Thanks for being on the Journal.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Dennis, what did you think? I'm sorry, you weren't down at the auto show, so I didn't let you ask a question.
No, it wasn't even, I wouldn't have had questions. As you know, I buy my technology from the Amish, so I'm not as, I'm up to date on cars as you, but I did want to.
They put wheels on their chairs?
Well, I can't divulge their methods, but here's the thing, their publishing model. You know, as you know, with a magazine, there's two different components. There's the actual content, which is based on experts and good writing and things like that. But in addition, their publishing model, and I don't know, did you get a chance to read Wes's most recent column?
Yes.
Okay, when he talks about how he is a print person, he even said that on the show, and I just, the way they're I just marvel at this, the way that their content on the internet complements the magazine so well. So that's what I look at. I love it.
Yeah, and some magazines, I mean, people, if you're interested in an automobile magazine, there's all kinds of deals. If you go to some of their websites, whether it's Car and Driver or whatever, sometimes if you click on the right place, you can find like a deal of 12 issues sent to your home for $5.
I know, it's crazy.
But you have to find it. It's usually about 8 or 10. Auto magazines cost really little when you're subscribing. On the stands, what's Auto Week here, retail? $4.99 or something. This is the Auto Week edition. I don't see it on there, but it's $30 a year typically to subscribe to Auto Week. But of course, that's 24 issues sent to your home. They have other deals on the internet. But what's interesting is some of them, you pay the $8 for the print subscription or whatever, you get the iPad version free. And the Car and Driver just started that. So you're not paying additional subscription if you have an iPad, folks. And, of course, most of their apps, the Car and Driver app, the Auto Week app, and so on, have limited information or specialize in just sort of buyer's guides or whatever. But they're free.
Right.
They're always free just for promotional sake. And so it's interesting. The pricing of digital and print, they're combining them now, and maybe they'll come down a little bit. And so it's really a great deal. Some of the automobile magazines, they don't cover a full range. They just cover so-called the sporting cars.
Right.
Or which is... in many cases, just the foreign cars that are the sporty ones. And Motor Trend for years, although they're changing, they used to just cover more the U.S.-made cars.
Right.
And so I like Auto Week and Car and Driver and Car Magazine from London because they talk about everybody. Car Magazine London always gets the stories first of anything that's first introduced in Europe.
But as you said, that's a huge, I mean, it's a comprehensive, oh, but a real
it's,
big, glossy.
It's one of those coffee table magazines that every week, I mean, you just relish the
it's
quality of the paper
yeah.
and the photography and their large formats. And they're, to me, it's worth the $8 a month for the print edition.
Right.
But even there, Car Online sends me emails, updates about news a couple times a week for free. So everybody can get a lot of this information for free via email if they just go to the magazine websites and give them their address, you know. And I think that's a cool way to find out what's going on. And then if you really love what they're doing or their writing style or their opinions or whatever, you should subscribe. Sure, support them in some way. Listen to the great music on WHFR and then support those musicians. Go to their websites. Try to get our independent alternative music for yourself that way.
These guys have been around for 53 years. That's
pretty
telling,
isn't
it? Yeah,
it's been around a long time.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to say, and I didn't get a chance to commend Wes about it or ask how it happened, but they have a road test editor who is a woman.
Natalie Neff.
Yeah, now I know that Automobile Magazine, Jean Jennings, is a female. Maybe people know of her background. She's the editor of Automobile. Mm-hmm. But Natalie Neff is a road tester, and you see a lot of their staff involved in their Auto Week TV show, which is it's just great to see them and hear them. Notice as a job thing, though, Dennis, in the media today, you got to be good at everything. You have to be good at stand-up video. You have to be a writer for different mediums. I mean, the print version, I want more facts and more details. And, of course, on these internet news things, you got to have the news summary with the most important ideas at the top and so on. So there's you have to be multi-talented, very smart, but you're very busy in the new media world, communications world out there.
Back to Natalie Neff. Wes's last column, his most recent column, he talks about some of the highlights of the year, one of them including the Auto Week Zia Fantasy Camp, and I'm not entirely sure what that entails. It sounds like they go out there and test drive cars, and it includes readers. Ooh. But he says he even enjoyed some good old rock and roll by Auto Week's own Natalie Neff's band. So not only is she a test driver, but she's in a rock and roll band.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
So we have to meet this young lady.
Well, obviously, a lot of women buying cars for themselves.
Absolutely.
And I don't believe that there's necessarily a woman's point of view, but I think all of these media industries for far too long have been male-dominated, and it is kind of an ongoing sexism. And here we are sitting two males here at the show.
Right.
But we need to promote and recommend people on the basis of their skills, not because of anything else. And I do recommend, remember, we have our non-traditional career seminars for people here at HFCC. Women should consider if they're good writers, writing for car magazines.
Absolutely.
I mean, if they don't have to be mechanics, you know, and it's not a guy thing. It's really like all the factors, performance, handling, and safety. And I'm not sure a woman has a special insight on any of those, but they should not avoid those careers. And I think Auto Week, at least visibly, seems to have a large percentage of women in their system, and I'm sure others would too. But it's one of those areas that there's going to be growth. Why? We need public transportation. There won't be buses and trains. We will need automobiles, individual mobile vehicles of some sort, far in the future. And it's an explosion of new technologies and ideas in the magazines. I didn't ask him if he had to hire new people in the last couple of years at Auto Week, but I bet they did increase the number of their staff. They can't do all these projects
exactly
with the same people.
But I think, like you said, it's different hats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even 10 years ago, it wasn't the same. And they have a digital editor as well as Wes, who's the print editor.
Right.
And it's very interesting.
If you look at the so-called masthead, that is the listing of who does what at all these car magazines, you'd be amazed how many people. And you know, some people are just doing the website. Some people are doing the video, and they have to cross over at times. But it's exciting. It is exciting. And it's something that you were saying, too, before the show, Dennis, that this is not just for car geeks. It is for everybody to have, of course, the safest car, the car that's that fits their pocketbook the best, but maybe even pollutes the environment less. I'm ashamed that, unlike in England, all cars, the two most important things, one is miles per gallon, and the second one is how much nasty carbon emissions.
Right.
And there's some criteria for that. And we could find that out about U.S. cars. But the fact is, in England and elsewhere in Europe, they promote it as the two most important things. In other words, of course, you want to do the best for the environment by having the least pollution.
Right.
That you might actually pick a car, all things considered the same, that is less polluting and maybe gets the same gas economy. And that's I think, a social responsibility.
Absolutely. So let's hope safety's third.
Yeah. Okay. And, of course, more miles per gallon means we're less dependent on foreign oil. We've got to get out of that. There will be a limited amount of oil in the future, becoming always less. There is, I don't know when peak oil might happen, but we'll know when the prices get to $10 a gallon. Nobody thought it would get to $4 a gallon.
Right,
so.
Right.
So, okay, there's social responsibility aspects of this, folks, too. And in Dearborn, yes, we have Ford Motor Company. But unlike some other journalists in town that were saying you have to buy Ford, Ford is a multinational company. Its headquarters are here. I have to say they had the most fantastic display at the auto show. If you're a Ford lover from Ford Country, you need to see that. They had more cars, I think, shown, even Mustangs. They must have had 8 to 10 Mustangs, different models, colors, special information displays. I've never seen such a wide variety of Fords displayed. And some sort of informational ride that puts 20 people or so in a circle, a seated circle, and by four or five huge hydraulic jacks lifts them into the ceiling. I thought they were being, I don't know where they went.
I don't know.
They're beamed to a mothership or something.
I never saw them again.
I didn't wait to see the circle come down, and if there's nobody there, I'd get worried.
Maybe they parked somewhere.
It was some sort of ride and some sort of maybe 3D screens or something up there. I've never seen such a display. The jacks, the hydraulics on this thing were massive, and it went all the way up to the high ceiling in Cobo Arena.
Yeah, no thanks.
And they fit into this opening there, and then you didn't know what was going on.
It's like Willy Wonka.
So it's true, all the car magazines say this too, many new Fords. Ford is on a good direction. They got great new models coming out of all types, and certainly should be, you know, a dealership that everybody would go into to consider a new car. And that's not a Ford ad. I'm saying there's a lot of other great cars, but Ford is definitely one of the significant players, and the auto show display is just unbelievable.
Did they have the concept car, the new e-Bugster by Volkswagen?
Yes, I love that too.
That looked
even
really...
though it's sort of chopped and lower to the road, but that's an all-electric VW Beetle.
Yeah.
Not called the new Beetle anymore.
E-Bugster.
And I don't know if it really has a bigger rear seat now. I could never get into the other Beetle seat being 6'1". But,
that's funny.
I'm really hoping in 2013 I can do the right thing and get an electric car of some sort. VW, of course, is one of the major manufacturers of diesel-powered cars.
Right.
They've got a great clean diesel, and it's they've just announced today, in fact, that it's going to be in the Beetle, in fact, in the fall. They're going to put the diesel in there. The Beetle just sort of got started in the new version, and they don't have the full complement of performance and or engines. So they're great diesel, which powers even their larger Passat. It's the same diesel that goes into the large VW Passat and VW Jetta and Golf. And in the Beetle, which is a somewhat lighter weight car, it should be really a lot of fun to drive. So we'll see. A lot of good choices out there, folks. And if you haven't gotten to the auto show, it is fun to do with the family. Spend plenty of time in advance planning on how to get a parking spot and walking over from wherever you park, because it's
especially this late in the
week. Yeah, there's going to be huge attendance this weekend too, but it's all doable. But just that's the effort. I think I spent, and I didn't see everything, I think I spent an hour and 45 minutes at Cobo Arena. That's the longest time I've ever been at an auto show, so there was that much to see.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
But I know last year you were disappointed somewhat, so I'm glad.
Yeah,
that
it was not a good year.
Well, according to Wes, it might even get better next year if Jaguar comes back, too. So.
Yeah.
How cool.
Always hope springs eternal there. A couple of comments from Jim Hightower. Let's just do one comment. This is, you probably heard about the fact that the Supreme Court, about a year and a half ago, said, it's called the Citizens United case, which has nothing to do with citizenship, that they felt that corporations had all the rights of people, including being able to collect and give unlimited amount of money in a variety of ways to political campaigns with, in many cases, especially in the super PAC setup that you may have heard about, no reporting requirements about where the money came from even. So, and shame on Mitt Romney for saying that he, hey, corporations are people too. Sure, people work for the corporations, but corporations cannot use their corporate funds, I believe, in my opinion, humble opinion, to sway political elections, because corporations, successful ones, have so much more money than individuals. We're not talking about contributions from individual employees at a company. We're talking about corporate advertising marketing money being used to influence elections. That's anti-democratic. Shame on every Supreme Court judge that felt that corporations were people too. Shame on them. And we need to have legislative action to repeal that. Or if we need an amendment to the Constitution to make it clear, then we need to do that, and we need to do it quick. Here's Hightower's opinion, although I think it sort of agrees with mine, but here's the way he puts it. He always puts it so beautifully.
The powers that be constantly try to pull the wool over people's eyes. But sometimes the wool blinders are so itchy that people rip them off and clearly see the scam. One of the itchiest ever is the Kafkaesque fiction put forth by America's right-wing power establishment that corporations are persons with the constitutional right to control our elections with their bottomless troves of corporate cash. This is an absurd perversion of nature itself. A person, after all, has a navel. Where's the corporate navel? Or its heart, brain, or soul? Also, if a corporation is a person, shouldn't it be subject to frontline military duty, to jail for its criminal violations, and even to the death penalty? As a listener pointed out to me in a recent email, many states do not allow persons under 18 years of age to marry, or, in corporate terminology, to merge. Plus, such young persons are subject to curfews and cannot legally be served alcohol. If you see a young corporation violating any of these teen laws, call the cops on them. When a corporate and governmental cabal makes such a power play that the very idea of it becomes a national joke, both the idea and the cabal are in trouble. That's the case with a comical claim of personhood for corporations. All across the country, beneath the radar of America's clueless elites, a savvy and scrappy grassroots coalition is mobilizing to overturn the anti-democratic effort by the Supreme Court, corporate front groups, and political sellouts to enthrone corporate money over the people. On January 20th and 21st, there will be two national days of action to rally public support for a constitutional amendment to reject the farce of corporate personhood. This is Jim Hightower saying, to join the rebellion, connect with www.movetoamend.org and www.democracyisforpeople.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal on WHFR.FM, the station making waves with kinds of programming you just can't get anywhere else on the Detroit dial. And thank you for listening to the show today. Dennis and I want to look at the stories coming up in Dearborn here. Some were in the Press and Guide and some Times Herald, and there's one from Patch.com. We wanted to focus on the state of the city
of Dearborn Heights.
Mm-hmm. They always have to find out when the city of Dearborn's try to find out from the city of Dearborn when their state of the city is going to be. It's always usually March, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of late in the year.
Yeah.
I don't think they have it, because when I called, they hadn't had a date yet, which I thought was weird. And the same thing happened last year.
Yeah, they almost don't know until a week or two before. And I don't know if they're waiting for the mayor to finish writing the speech, or if there's other contracts coming in or going out that he wants to announce the results of.
When I used to have get-togethers at my house and I didn't want people to come, I would wait till the last second. But I don't think that's their strategy.
And they changed it from the beautiful performing Dearborn Ford Center for Performing Arts to City Hall's little auditorium. So if everybody wanted to attend, they couldn't even fit in there. It holds about 110 people, I think.
You're right. And when we actually broadcast live backstage
2 years ago.
Three years ago. That would have been... Mm-hmm.
The last year they were at the center.
But it would have been Mayor O'Reilly's first official year, right?
Maybe.
I think it was the first official State of the City.
Well, I think he's been there longer than that. But nonetheless, I mean, they don't really want to invite people. Of course, maybe people watch it on cable TV.
Right.
I don't know. But the State of the City, it was done at a luncheon this last, was it last Tuesday or a week ago Tuesday? Well, in any event, Mayor Dan Pletko from Dearborn Heights gave...
January 10th.
January 10th, okay. As it's described in the Press and Guide by J. Patrick Pepper, a somber assessment of the city of Dearborn Heights' precarious finances in this, and this is his 10th annual State of the City address. So he's been there 10 years, he didn't do any warm up jokes.
Does he usually?
Yeah, and it's often reported in the paper because his jokes are so bad.
Are they bad?
They're not funny.
Are they as bad as mine?
Yeah. By comparison, you are a professional humorist, Dennis, compared to the jokes I remember.
I'm going to take that a
maybe
long way.
He just had a lot of criticism, decided not to do the jokes again.
Sure.
But the first quote they have for him here, Pletko said, "It is certainly no secret that we as a community, like cities and townships across the U.S., are experiencing a perfect storm," which is actually a horrendously tragic and terrible storm. Some people may not remember the movie. You know, I'm just thinking the Perfect Storm, the movie, and the book before it was so many years ago, they may not get the connection there. But a perfect storm is not a good thing, folks, okay? Of unprecedented financial challenges that continue to threaten their very ability. And it's interesting that they put in the story, J. Patrick Pepper or the editor put in the word sick, which is S-I-C in parentheses. Mm-hmm. And Dennis, what does that mean when S-I-C is used?
It means that they are reporting exactly as it was written or spoken, but it may be improper. There's improper grammar. Sure.
Yeah. And that's what it is. They think that his pronoun, the word there, should be singular.
And they're just saying that this is not a misprint. This was right. Exactly as
you
it was reported.
You can't blame the newspaper or J. Patrick Pepper for this.
I like that.
It's the way he spoke it, folks.
That's right.
It's a direct quote. And I think there's some question there about the reference to the pronoun as an old English teacher. But anyway, these challenges continue to threaten the very ability of the cities to provide even the most basic services. And there's 130 people at Warren Valley Golf Course and Banquet Center to hear him say that. He lamented the trend of government spending cuts at the state and federal level, saying the cumulative effect is like the city, quote, had the rug pulled out from under us, unquote. He pointed to the expected 20% reduction in federal community development block grant funding this year, which equates to a $200,000 loss. He also mentioned a projected $200,000 cut. This is for Dearborn Heights. It would be a lot more for Dearborn, of
course.
To state revenue sharing payments, which have fallen roughly $3 million since a $7.7 million high in 2000. So that's from the state of Michigan. Also, a source of concern is a potential repeal of Michigan's personal property tax, he said. State legislatures are in discussions. This struck me as amazing, over how to go about eliminating the tax. But so far, there's been little in the way of possible replacements. Well, of course, we talked to some people here, and we will again. We'll keep this up every April, Dennis. Talk to the fair tax people.
Absolutely.
And their proposal. It is a way to get rid of personal income tax. I'm not sure they can get rid of the personal property tax. Never heard that before.
No.
I put an exclamation mark there. And we got to ask George Duraney about this. How can you get rid of the personal property tax? Even fair tax is not intended to replace that. It will replace the state tax
right. And
the income tax. And I could be wrong. I don't think it was intended to replace the personal property tax. So anyway, we'll get into that more. And if you don't know what fair tax is for Michigan, mifairtax.org will explain it. Or for the whole country, and it's possible that it could be a different way to pay taxes for the entire United States of America. A few Republican nominees were even talking about it. I think those have dropped out already. But oh well.
Didn't they say that the property tax was the one exception to the consumption tax because
right. It
varied so much?
Yes. So well, in bad economic times, property taxes go down. So that's terrible for financing the state of Michigan, but ongoing. So maybe the Michigan fair tax can replace income tax, property tax, and the sales tax all in one.
Which would keep it more steady, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't want to get into that now. We'll talk about fair tax later with people that really know, because I think it's a great proposal, even though I know any major change is bound to have some problems, and some people don't want to change. But for the property tax to be the basis of the funding of city and county governments, it's a disaster.
It's too volatile.
In a downturn.
Sure.
It's the most volatile way
Absolutely.
To try to collect the money.
Especially when prices are overinflated during mm-hmm. really good times, and then they come crashing down. Did you, you said somber, which I imagine J. Patrick Pepper, that was his word.
Yeah.
It sounds almost desperate, too, because the mayor of Dearborn Heights is stating, look, we've made these cuts. We've done this. What more is there? And the state isn't helping. Very interesting.
I think I'm losing my headphones here, but that's
it's
the other side of the microphone story, folks. But I don't have to hear myself to talk. I don't think I have to.
You sound great.
Mm. But our insider here on the WHFR staff, Ned Apigian, is a council member, and he was at the experience in Dearborn Heights, and he had an interesting take on all of this. He said. Remember, I made a big deal of it. I guess you were hearing me say this, that before the end of 2011, they had to pass a budget. There was a deadline. They would lose a ton of money and support. And some of the council members, not Apigian, and others said, no, we don't like the mayor's recommendations. He gave them recommendations right. for cuts. And said, we don't like those, and we don't want them, and we don't know what we're going to do. And well, they finally passed his recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
But they got a long way to go to balance the budget still. They still got more to cut. And they might not even keep some of his recommendations. Ned said, look, we had a deadline. We just passed something. But we can go back and redo the budget every month. It's not a big deal, folks. I mean, if you don't like what was in the other one, we'll just revise the other budget. We've still got several months to figure out what to do. So he was in favor of just passing it so that the deadline and there wouldn't be a crisis with, I don't know, some state auditors or whatever. And I mentioned to him that the city of Dearborn either has already passed that first budget. They didn't seem, there was no similar story about a deadline looming and they were going to lose funding. And so maybe Dearborn is just, maybe they've got some sort of different situation. But he said, yeah, they still have to cut millions of dollars in Dearborn Heights, even though their millage passed. Just like in Dearborn, we got a lot of cuts that are going to have to be decided in the next few months
right.
by both city councils, Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, and probably every other city. Oh, my God, Detroit. Let's not get into that
one. Yeah, please don't. That's another show.
Can you imagine
what Dearborn Heights would have been like without the Headley override? Can you imagine
Or Dearborn.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing left to spend money on, but that's largely, as I said, the problem of trying to raise funds based on property taxes and property value. If it's declining, you're going to pay less tax. And that means your city services will be cut to bits, which nobody wanted. And I think that was the argument that worked, at least among a majority of voters in
right.
both cities. And that's why the millages were passed. But it's important to point out it's not going to be the end mm-hmm. of that. Just like in Dearborn mentioned last week, there won't be any pool closures for this coming summer this year. But unless they work out a way to cut back and save money on that, pools will close in 2013.
Absolutely. They're prepared to have only two right. open. You're right.
Right. So there has to be more of that. Okay. And I thought it was, the state is cutting back and so on. We want to get this in. Only about 4 minutes to go, my goodness,
wow.
before Highway 61 and Joanne Korchinska starts up for the next 4 hours. So we don't want to run over too much. She's not here yet. Oh, there she comes. All right. Okay, I've got a video on the hallway and she's coming in. Okay. Dearborn Planning Commission was deadlocked on the Goodwill store addition to the West Dearborn Shopping Center that we talked about. We thought it was going to be easily approved because two members of the commission, there's seven on the Planning Commission, citizens appointed by the mayor, couldn't make it. So the five people left voted in favor by 3-2, but I guess the decision needs 2/3 because it seems by the story the Press and Guide from Sunday seems to indicate that they needed five votes in favor, or it wouldn't happen. That's asking an awful lot, even when the Senate or other body, two-thirds have to vote before the Planning Commission rules are followed, and it's holding up the Goodwill store. And I don't – that's – I blame the missing commissioners. If you're appointed to an important commission like the Planning Commission and have been sworn in officially, you need to show up. I know they're not paying you anything, are they? I don't think it's a paid position, the Planning Commission. Show up. I think Mayor O'Reilly ought to fire people that miss like two meetings in a row or something. By the way, 61 of our legislators, including George Durrani, did not miss a single vote in the House of Representatives in Lansing.
And that's impressive.
Good for them. Yeah.
Well, you know,
but that's what you expect, right? If you vote for somebody, you expect them to be there for the votes. I know some votes might be slam dunk. Like some Republicans probably could sit a few out since they've got a clear majority in both venues. Well, you don't need my vote. I'm going to have an extended lunch or something. But
sure, this is different, though.
Yeah, and Planning Commission. I mean, you say, well, I don't like the idea of a Goodwill store, used. It is a classier outfit in Royal Oak than Salvation Army stores. If you're worried about the looks, and what do you want? No store there, just a shell. Does that look good for Dearborn? That's not good. And I know a lot of people would like the special value that they can get from buying recycled clothes. Imagine, recycle, reduce, reuse. Recycle is the first word. Well, maybe reuse. I can't remember what order, but...
what is it? Recycle, reuse?
Reduce, reuse. That was the ecology thing, but I don't know which was the primary one. I think the idea is to use less.
Sure.
That's the first thing, whatever you're doing, so you don't throw away as much. But if you do throw it away, so reduce has to be the first one.
Recycle has to be second.
And then recycle second. And
reuse third. Yep. Recycle, reuse.
Isn't it the same thing? Well, whatever it is. Do it all, folks. Okay. And Goodwill would be helpful there, maybe in a few jobs for people in Dearborn, maybe not. I don't know. But shame on the Planning Commission. Get your act together, folks, whoever you are. It's interesting the story didn't give the names of who was absent. I think they should have done that. And maybe just being held up 1 month is not bad. But they were willing to break ground. They said once it's approved by the Planning Commission, 2 days later they will go and start breaking ground and getting the store ready for opening in, was it April? Amazing.
Right. They still may be able to open in April, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, it is 2 o'clock. It's WHFR Dearborn. And Joanna's pulling CDs right now for a fantastic day. Yeah, it's good to know that the, you know, we talked to Dan Merritt from the Green Brain Comics, that he's the vice president of the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority.
EDDDA.
EDDDA.
You got it.
And they have approved contract for artist space to be in that area. But I think the story, if I didn't misread it, said they haven't made a choice of where that space is going to be yet.
Not yet. They're looking right
but at
now.
Least they have permission from the Development Authority to go ahead and do that. And again, it's sort of like a Planning Commission question. Do you want artists there? Ooh, artists. What about those artists?
Yeah.
Ooh.
They wear their berets crooked.
Yeah. Come on, folks. Art and culture, that's what life is all about, hopefully.
It should be, right.
It should be. And there's all kinds of it. Let's take your pick. Also, I don't usually cover the Mackinac Centers or the Mackinac Centers for Public Policy editorials, and they're constantly every week in the Dearborn Times Herald because they send them to them for free. You know,
well, I get them at the Mirror News, too.
And this Tom Ganter has said, U of MD, U of M, University of Michigan, okay, Ann Arbor, but satellite areas, too, they're complaining that they're not getting enough revenue sharing from the state of Michigan. Well, Tom, the cities are complaining, too. You know, we just talked about Dearborn Heights and Mayor O'Reilly.